Japan's Middle East oil habit gets an Iran war reality check. The two-week closure of the Strait of Hormuz didn't just spike oil prices, it shattered the illusion that Japan's 95% dependence on Middle Eastern crude is manageable risk. The Iran war ceasefire agreed Tuesday reopens the choke point that carries the bulk of Tokyo's energy imports, but the damage to strategic confidence is permanent. For the first time since 2008, Japan deployed its full strategic reserve, domestic fuel prices hit 18-year highs, and the G7's most structurally vulnerable energy importer confronted a reality it has deferred for decades. Sole-source geographic concentration is an unhedged bet against geopolitical stability. The question is no longer whether Japan diversifies its crude slate, but whether it can move fast enough to avoid the next closure. The math is unforgiving. Japan imports more than 95% of its crude from the Middle East and routes the majority through the Strait of Hormuz, the 21-mile-wide choke point that Iran effectively weaponized during the recent conflict between the United States, Israel, and Iran. As an archipelago with no cross-border pipeline optionality, Japan has no physical bypass. The result, a price shock sharper than almost anywhere else in the G7, and the largest drawdown of strategic petroleum reserves in Tokyo's history. Parul Bakshi, a visiting research fellow at the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies, framed the stakes plainly. This latest geopolitical shock once again highlights the structural tension in Japan's energy strategy. The real test will be whether Japan can convert this moment of vulnerability into a catalyst for long-term energy transformation. The closure exposed not just Japan's geographic risk, but the downstream fragility of economies that depend on stable energy transit. Brazil, for instance, saw annual inflation accelerate to 4.14% in March, driven in part by diesel prices that surged 13.9% month over month as Hormuz remained shut. Gasoline rose 4.5% in the same period. Brasilia suspended federal taxes on diesel imports, imposed a 12% levy on crude oil exports to fund fuel subsidies, and deployed direct payments to distributors, yet the measures barely dented the pass-through from international crude markets. Brazil imports approximately 30% of its diesel consumption, leaving it structurally exposed. If a diversified producer like Brazil struggled to insulate consumers, Japan's mono-dependency offered no such cushion. The structural trap, why Japan can't just switch suppliers. Japan's energy planners have understood the Hormuz risk for decades. The difference now is that the theoretical vulnerability became kinetic, and the options for rapid diversification remain constrained. Tokyo sources more than 95% of its crude from the Middle East, primarily Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, and Kuwait. Switching that volume to non-Middle Eastern barrels, from the United States, Canada, or even Brazil, requires more than signing new contracts. Japanese refineries are configured for the lighter, sweeter crude grades that dominate Middle Eastern production. Processing heavier North American or Latin American crude demands costly refinery retrofits, catalyst adjustments, and hydrocracker capacity that most Japanese facilities lack. The capital expenditure and lead time to retool refineries could run into the billions of dollars and require multi-year timelines, hardly a solution for a choke point that can close in 48 hours. Yet the alternative is equally unappealing: maintain the status quo and accept that Japan's energy security is effectively subcontracted to the U.S. Fifth Fleet's ability to keep Hormuz open. The Pentagon's role as de facto insurer of Japanese energy flows is a geopolitical asymmetry that Tokyo has tolerated because the alternatives were expensive. That calculus is now under review. Analysts point to nuclear power as the fastest available hedge against crude import dependency. Japan shut down the majority of its nuclear fleet following the 2011 Fukushima disaster, but 15 years later, public opposition has softened and energy pragmatism has hardened. Restarting idled reactors does not reduce crude imports for transportation fuel, but it does displace oil and LNG in power generation, freeing up import capacity and reducing aggregate energy vulnerability. The political pathway to large-scale nuclear restarts remains contested, but the Hormuz closure has shifted the risk-benefit debate in Tokyo's favor. Latin America's inflation pass-through, the ripple effect beyond Tokyo-Japan's energy crisis played out as a first-order shock, but the second-order effects radiated across import-dependent economies in Latin America. Brazil's March inflation data provides a quantitative window into how Hormuz disruptions cascade into consumer prices thousands of miles from the Persian Gulf. The Brazilian Institute of Geography and Statistics reported that transportation costs rose 1.6% month over month in March, driven entirely by fuel price acceleration. Diesel, the lifeblood of Brazil's logistics network, surged 13.9% compared to a 0.2% increase the prior month. Gasoline jumped 4.5% after declining 0.6% in February. President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva's government responded with a fiscal package that suspended PIS and COFINS taxes on diesel imports and sales, but the measures failed to arrest price growth because Brazil imports roughly 30% of its diesel demand. The exposure left Brazilian consumers vulnerable to global crude market volatility in ways that domestic policy levers could not fully offset. The government's 12% crude export tax, imposed to fund fuel subsidies, was provisionally suspended this week by a federal judge in Rio de Janeiro following a legal challenge by Shell, TotalEnergies, Equinor, Repsol Sinopec, and Petrogal. The judicial intervention underscores the difficulty of using tax policy to insulate domestic consumers when the underlying commodity shock originates in a geographically concentrated supply chain. Brazil's central bank cut the benchmark Selic rate to 14.75% annually at its March meeting, the first reduction since 2024. However, uncertainty over the duration of Middle East conflict and its downstream effects on crude prices raises the prospect that the easing cycle could stall or reverse if energy-driven inflation persists. Food prices, another category with heavy impact on lower-income Brazilian households, rose 1.5% month-over-month, compounding the inflationary pressure from transportation costs. The diversification playbook, what Japan must do now the immediate crisis has passed, but the strategic vulnerability remains. Japan's energy transformation requires three parallel work streams, each with distinct timelines and capital requirements. First, refinery reconfiguration. Tokyo must incentivize or subsidize the capital investments required to process non-Middle Eastern crude. This means upgrading coking units, adding hydrocracking capacity, and adjusting catalyst systems to handle heavier, sourer barrels from North America and Latin America. The cost will be measured in billions, and the lead time in years, but the alternative is continued exposure to Hormuz risk. Second, nuclear restarts. Japan currently operates a fraction of its pre-Fukushima nuclear capacity. Accelerating the restart process for idled reactors, subject to updated safety standards and local government approvals, would displace oil and LNG in power generation and reduce aggregate fossil fuel import dependency. Public opinion has shifted since 2011, and the Hormuz closure provides the political predicate for faster permitting. The economic case is straightforward. Nuclear baseload generation insulates electricity prices from crude market volatility in ways that oil-fired power cannot. Third, strategic reserve expansion and diversification. Japan deployed its full strategic petroleum reserve during the Hormuz closure. That reserve was sufficient for a two-week disruption, but a prolonged closure would have forced industrial rationing. Expanding reserve capacity and pre-positioning non-Middle Eastern crude in bonded storage would provide optionality in future crises. The fiscal cost is modest relative to the economic damage of a multi-week energy squeeze. Japan imports 95% plus of its crude from the Middle East, with the bulk transiting the Strait of Hormuz. A two-week closure triggered the largest strategic reserve release since 2008 and sent domestic fuel prices to 18-year highs. The Plaquemines view the Hormuz closure as the first in a series of stress tests that will expose the fragility of geographically concentrated energy supply chains. Japan's vulnerability is acute because it lacks physical alternatives, no pipelines, no domestic production, no overland transit routes. But the structural risk extends to every major energy importer that routes crude through contested choke points: South Korea, Taiwan, the Philippines, and increasingly, Brazil and other Latin American importers that rely on Middle Eastern diesel and refined products. What Plaquemines sees is a coming divergence between energy secure and energy insecure developed economies. The United States and Canada are net energy exporters. The European Union has diversified away from Russian gas and is building LNG import infrastructure. Japan, by contrast, has deferred the hard capital decisions required to diversify its crude slate, and the political consensus to restart nuclear capacity has only recently begun to form. The result is a growing energy security gap within the G7, and that gap will manifest as relative economic resilience in future geopolitical shocks. The investment implication is straightforward. Capital will favor jurisdictions with diversified energy supply chains, and will discount those with single-source dependencies. Japan's equity risk premium should widen relative to peers until Tokyo demonstrates credible progress on refinery reconfiguration and nuclear restarts. The energy security discount is no longer theoretical, it is a quantifiable drag on valuations for Japan-exposed industrials, logistics, and manufacturing equities. The second-order play is in the companies that enable energy diversification: refinery engineering firms, nuclear services providers, and LNG infrastructure developers. Japan's energy transformation will require tens of billions of dollars in capital deployment over the next decade, and the firms that capture that spending will generate outsized returns. The Hormuz closure was a wake-up call. The question is whether Tokyo moves fast enough to avoid the next one. The bottom line: Japan's 95% dependence on Middle Eastern crude is no longer a manageable risk, it is a structural vulnerability that the Iran war exposed in real time. The ceasefire reopens the Strait of Hormuz, but it does not resolve the underlying fragility of Seoul's source geographic concentration. Tokyo's energy planners now face a capital allocation decision they have deferred for decades: retool refineries to process non-Middle Eastern crude, restart nuclear capacity at scale, and expand strategic reserves, or accept that Japan's energy security is hostage to the next Middle East crisis. The fiscal cost of diversification is high, but the economic cost of the next Hormuz closure is higher. Institutional capital should watch which path Tokyo chooses, because the answer will determine whether Japan remains an energy-secure developed economy or becomes a structurally discounted one.